This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes, Love Sport's very own Laurie Kellis, and BBC Match of the Day magazine's Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch, and not Sean, because Sean is still suspended for a number of reasons. The sheet is as long as my arm. The man sleeps. The man is drunk. The man can't turn up. There's lots of reasons, many we can't name, but Sean, you are still on parole. You are not allowed in the studio. We'll be going through a number of those factors why later and digging a little bit deeper into that. But we in the studio will be reviewing the game against Brighton. It was a disappointing goalless draw, or wasn't it? Because, you know, it's still a point in the Premier League, and under Steve Bruce, points are good. We're going to be talking all about that. Steve Bruce, well, he is the favourite to be sacked next. We're going to be talking a little bit of that and then the opposition view later, because Newcastle do take on Leicester this weekend, and that is a juicy tie because Leicester are in very good form at the minute, beating Luton last night in the Cup 4-0, which a tie that maybe Newcastle would have had if they beat Leicester in the Cup earlier this month, and obviously Leicester smashing Spurs on the weekend. Let's go into the Brighton game then. It was disappointing. It was 0-0. But was it a good point? Because it is still a clean sheet. You were at home, or were you expecting a little bit more, Ketch?
It was a miracle we got a point, I think, in the end. And I think even Steve Bruce came out and said, we got away with one, which is kind of crazy to say. Hayden said we couldn't get near the ball. He was overheard by the press box saying, coming over and saying, this isn't working, this isn't working. Cher was saying, where's Manquillo playing, where am I playing? Steve Bruce's tactics, you know, he's changed it twice before. He's changed it during the first half, and then he's changed it at half-time to adapt to how Brighton approached the game. Why haven't we watched Brighton in advance and shaped our game plan prior to the game kicking off? So it was amazing we got something out of there. The possession stats were scary. We had so little possession at home to Brighton. And these are the games that tell us the most about the squad. We've played Arsenal, we've played Liverpool, we've played Spurs. We're not going to really learn much about the team, but when we play the likes of Watford at home, Brighton at home, that's when we find out what this squad's really about, and I didn't like what I saw on Saturday.
Well, you didn't like what you saw. Obviously, the stats wasn't the greatest, the low possession, low chances. We know what Steve Bruce said after the game, but on Monday, Laurie, he had a few slightly different comments to make, didn't he?
Well, you've disputed this, but reportedly the words he used was that it's not working, we need a different approach and not play on the front foot. Now, what about the approach that we took against Brighton can be described as playing on the front foot? We had less than 30% possession. It was a horrific game of football. I sprinted from one place in the watching the first half to get to the second half on time at another
to
pub.
To be with me.
To be with Matt Ketchell, because I was watching it by myself. I was the only person in the pub, because they obviously knew what was coming. And
to put it on main event, Sky, what are Sky doing picking this game? To put it on main event is crazy.
It was, well, yeah, I mean, with the fixtures that were, I even thought that in advance of the game, what are they doing putting that on the evening fixture on a Saturday night? Because it doesn't, I mean, I'm happy to say that Newcastle-Brighton, if I were a neutral, wouldn't it excite me in any way. It was an awful game.
It was an awful game. Obviously, Steve Bruce might have changed what he said from Saturday to Monday. But were there any positives to take from the game, Aaron? Because it is a point. Can we look at that, or can we not get too bogged down in the stats? Please, provide me with something positive for the Toon Army. You can't do it.
The one positive I can say is that it's another point close at 40. But, I mean, as the lads have touched on, at home to Brighton, to say you've got away with one isn't good enough. You know, to be playing as if you... It looked like Brighton were at the Amex, you know, the amount of possession. It looked like they were at home and we were just trying to counter. But then when we had the ball, we weren't actually countering. There was just no plan. There was no system. You know, like Ketch touched on, Hayden, you know, players don't know what they're doing. Players don't know where they're meant to be. There's just no cohesion. And I think the telling thing, obviously, we've talked about the stats, was that Newcastle had less percentage than Watford did, and Watford got beat 8-0 off Man City. So there's just nothing, for me, there's no positives from that game, because one, going into it, you need to be looking at those games against teams like Brighton and Watford and Norwich and coming away with 3 points, especially at home. So No, I'm sorry, Charlie, but no positives.
All right,
sorry.
I'll give you three apart in the studio. But Ketch did mention it as well there. The games that you are studying closer, Watford, Norwich, Brighton, these aren't the games Newcastle have done that well in. Obviously, the Norwich defeat was a really bad one. But is it fair to say at the minute for Newcastle, it almost feels like one step forward and two or three steps back? Because we're seeing patches of good play. You know, there was a little bit against Liverpool. You know, you did get that great goal. You could, there was a few chances you could have scored again, although Liverpool ran out worthy winners. Then obviously the great win against Spurs when you know desire, commitment, effort for 90 minutes. Then the game against Brighton again just felt a little bit like no one really knew what they were doing. Where was the desire again? Do we feel that we just can't find the consistency at the minute, Ketch?
Oh yeah, there's no consistency, and the results show that. But that is the story of Newcastle since we let Keegan go, second time, really, one step forward, two steps back. I mean, the summer was such a sliding doors moment. I think Rafa, Ashley didn't have to move heaven and earth to keep Rafa and Rondon. I think if those two situations are different, if we keep Rafa, if we keep Rondon, and then do everything else we did, sign Saint-Maximin, sign Kraft, sign John Linton, imagine a scenario where we've got Rondon, he can start the season, Joe Linton can bed in, learn the Premier League, learn what Rondon's doing, learn the system, and then you've got Andy Carroll. Get yourself fit, Andy, have 3 months, come in and be an impact player, get maybe 5 goals and contribute to the goals that Rondon and hopefully Joe Linton will get. Imagine that scenario. It Ashley didn't have to move heaven and earth to keep Rafa, to keep Rondon, but he hasn't, and it's, you know, we're kind of, you can see where this is going.
Obviously, as football fans, we always want more. We always want the best for our club. We want wins. We don't want draws. We don't want defeats. We want the performances certainly to be good, even if we can't get that result. But is there an element of, and I agree with you, but the glass is a little bit half empty, because on the flip side, it could be so much worse. That doesn't excuse things, because that means we shouldn't look. But, you know, like, Brighton might have got that win. You might not have got that result against Spurs, and you could be in a lot worse position than you are. I know you can't look at football like that, but is there a case for it, Laurie?
Well, I mean, you say that, but the thing is, about if we hadn't got that result against Spurs, which was a surprise, and you can't guarantee that, you know, those sort of results, however well you play against the top teams, they're often not wins. You know, we played decent against Arsenal. We didn't win. You don't always win when you play well against the top teams, even if you play well. And the thing is if we hadn't beat Spurs, think about what position we would be in. We're barely out of the relegation zone as it is. We'd be on 2 points without that win. And just going back to what Ketch said, Mike Ashley didn't have to move heaven and earth at all. And I don't think he even would have had to sign Kraft now if we've seen how he's played, because he's pretty horrific. But
sit on the fence, Laurie.
I just think that, you know, you can't say that a positive is a one-off good performance where we've managed to beat a big team, because if that's what you're basing your season on and giving yourself hope, we can't guarantee that our wins are going to come from, you know, playing other big teams when we can't beat Watford and we can't beat Brighton at home.
All right, well, 6 games is a very small sample size. We can't judge it on 6 games alone in what is a 38 Premier League game season. But let's try, because 6 games feels like a mini milestone where we can look and, you know, people, you sort of go in fixtures in 6-game brackets, don't you? After 6 games, it's 5 points. Aaron, how do you feel? What 3 words sum up the season so far? Where do you stand? I know it's not good enough, but you're like, you know, it's probably where about I think we were, I'd take it, or completely not the case whatsoever.
It's where I think it's where I thought we were going to be at this point. You know, I'm surprised we're actually out the relegation zone, to be fair, by whatever margin it is. But I think the 3 words is just apathy, confusion, and a bit of disillusion. There's such a like disconnect between the fans and the board and the management and even some of the players. It's just not a nice scenario. And I think, you know, yes, you've touched on, yes, that Spurs win was great and we can all celebrate it and that defensive performance was good. But as Laurie says, you know, that should have been the building block. You know, we did all right against Leicester, you know, a couple of days later, but then it just goes straight out the window again when we're drawn against Watford, who have been awful this season, and Saturday was even worse. So, yes, I mean, but like I say, it's where I expected us to be. You know, the appointment, we all know, shouldn't have happened. And I think, I mean, yes, we're only 6 games in, but if you look at the next 4, you know, Leicester, Man United, Chelsea, Wolves, on paper, you know, you're not really going to be looking at getting many points out of those. So, yes, it's only 6 games, but there is that danger that if it doesn't change soon, then we're going to be cut adrift.
Very strange. It's a tough time at Newcastle at the minute. Ketch, what are your three words? And is this whereabout you thought Newcastle would be after six games? Very easy to say because six games in and everyone is close. But I would say, you know, if your next win, you could be level on points with Man United and Spurs. So it's not all bad.
Yeah, I mean, well,
trying to give any positive.
You could look at it that way. The scary thing is he's changed his system twice. We're not even into October, and I still don't think he knows what system he wants to play. He has no clue as to what his best starting 11 is. I know there's been injuries, but he doesn't have a clue how to set up his team. And after six games, that's kind of crazy. We talk a lot about last season we didn't win for, 10 games under Rafa, but Rafa had a system, he stuck to it, it was drilled, and it was, you know, short-term pain for long-term gain because the wins eventually came and we knew what Rafa was getting at. Bruce is chopping and changing like the wind.
Well, let me ask you a question. And how quickly should a manager know his best 11? Because I know this is the Newcastle fan show, but on the flip side, you know, Arsenal have been getting wins lately, very luckily, and there's been a strong social media suggestion, hashtag MReal, and saying that he doesn't know his best 11. Well, he's reaching nearly 18 months in charge now. Bruce is six games in charge. You're saying he doesn't know. When should a manager know his strongest starting 11 and what formation works best and what system works best for that set of players?
Well, personally, I think in terms of Newcastle, one of the reasons that Steve Bruce has changed and doesn't necessarily know his best 11 is because our the way that we've made signings and the players that we have currently in the squad, as we touched on last week, we have a lot more strength and depth in defence. So there's not tons of options going forward if things aren't working out. And so I think that's one of the big issues is actually we don't know our best 11 because we're not a team that's geared to scoring goals at the minute, and we're not a team that's geared to going forward. So, there are things that need to be changed, and obviously Steve Bruce is fiddling about with the tactics, but I think he doesn't know his best 11 because we don't have a best 11. I know that sounds kind of stupid, but our players aren't. There isn't enough strength and depth where you can guarantee that all the players you're going to put out in the forward position is going to do well because, as we've seen the other day, we're bringing back players like Joe Linton and Sam Maximan far too early. Sam Maximan, I would argue, probably would be in our best 11. I know we haven't seen a lot of him, but he's injured. But I just think that we're being forced to play in a way where we're playing three centre-backs because our centre-backs are our best players in the team. And if that wasn't the case, if we'd signed to support the strikers better, if we'd thought about how we were going to bridge defence and attack, then our best 11 would be a different setup. But we're playing what's not our best 11 because we haven't got the players to play it, if that makes sense.
Ketch, do you agree with that?
You know what? Shelby's a big problem with this. He is not helpful for that. He's probably he's on the biggest wages. He's got regarded as a key player. He doesn't fit the system. Our best position is defence. We're playing with three centre-halves. Shelby's coming to get the ball off them and it's too crowded. He's picking the ball up from defence and there's six outfield players there and no one in front of him to aim. It doesn't work in our system. I think the elephant in the room is Shelby needs to go in January. That he doesn't fit in this system. The best midfield partnership is Hayden and a fit Longstaff. Hayden, when he plays alongside Shelby, you can tell he doesn't like it because he's carrying the water. Shelby, and then we played with three midfielders in Norwich, and Shelby's just bossing the other two around and not picking up anyone himself. He dictates, and it just doesn't work. Our best position, we've got some good ball-carrying centre defenders. They don't need Shelby to pass the ball to and ping diagonals. When Lejeune comes into the team, Cher can do it. They can ping the diags to the fullbacks who can bomb forward. Shelby's a big problem, and I think Bruce needs to make a big decision, get rid of him and use the money on something different.
Well, Rafa was already kind of onto that problem, wasn't he? Because Shelby really fell out of favour towards the back of last season. He has kind of wormed his way back in under Steve Bruce. Is this maybe not the root of all problems, but it's a big thorn in what Newcastle's best 11 is?
It's a massive problem. I wouldn't say it's the root cause because, I mean, Shelby on his day, he's shown he is very, very creative when he gets it right. When he's on song going forward, he is probably the best creative midfielder we've got that sits that far deep. But the problem for me is, like you say, Rafa sort of knew that as soon as we got out of the Championship, Shelby wasn't going to have the amount of time and space and control of a game. He's not useful enough because Rafa's team was all about hard work, graft, and players have to graft, and Shelby does not do that. So when you've got Isaac Hayden and Longstaff, who will run their socks off as well as tackling, as well as playing forward balls, Shelby sort of becomes obsolete because he doesn't really do the other two. So I'm a fan of Shelby, but watching him on Saturday, he was walking, and like Ketch said, Hayden's got to do so much more work. It creates like such an imbalance in the team. I would agree with Ketch. I think it's time to get rid and use the money elsewhere, because we're quite strong in central midfield. You know, Hayden, Key, Sean and Matty Longstaff, you know, so I would say get rid of him. I don't think it's the root cause, but I would certainly agree that when he's playing it, I don't think it works the system that Bruce is trying to play, and it certainly didn't work what Rafa was trying to play.
Well, do you agree? Is Shelby a problem in this side? You can tweet us to have your say at Love Sport Radio, or call us on 0208 70 2558. We're discussing Steve Bruce doesn't know his best 11. We're going to be talking all about that next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes, Laurie Callis and Matt Ketchell from the BBC Match of the Day magazine. We are still missing Sean Wade. We are not sure where he is. The WhatsApps are MIA. We're pretty sure he's asleep or protesting somewhere. We heard that he's been heckling towards other podcasts. This is the only show that matters, Sean. Where are you? Please get in touch. Everything. This is what we want from Newcastle. Desire, effort, commitment. We are seeing a lack of it in every area from you, Sean Wade there. But let's talk about Steve Bruce and his side, because we were just trying to work out what is his best 11. Well, the bookies, they agree with you. They say they think that Steve Bruce doesn't know his best 11. He's not getting the 11 to play, because not only is he one of the favourites to lose his job, Newcastle are favourites to be relegated. What do you think of that, Aaron?
I think on the basis of the first six games, it's probably fair. But I mean, you know, I wouldn't like to put any money on it with, like you say, the season only being six games old. Mm. I think that's probably partly down to, I think probably before the season started, we were probably fourth or fifth favourite. You know, you probably would have had Norwich and Sheffield United coming up who were lower. But they've sort of shown a bit of nous, so they've came up, they've got some big scalps. You know, Norwich have obviously beaten City. Sheffield United obviously turned over Everton at the weekend, and we, apart from the Spurs game, haven't really shown anything that's going to keep us up. So, I mean, yeah, I'd say on the basis of the first six games, I'd agree with it. It's a long season. I think it depends, you know, the longer Bruce stays. You know, if Bruce stays and it's like this and the club decide to give him time and money in January, then I think the likelihood of us going down is probably stronger. But, you know, if they decide, you know, the next couple of games we don't pick up any points and they decide to just cut loose, then, you know, it's a different ball game, depending on who comes in. But I would say at the minute it's probably fair on balance.
Well, the fans obviously expected a long, tough season. They expected them to be whereabouts that Newcastle are. We all said that in the first segment. But did the board think that? Because if they did, then perhaps maybe they won't get rid of Steve Bruce. They knew it was going to be a long fight. And if they obviously keep him, they should be giving him time, whether he's the manager that we wanted or not. You know, a manager hopefully will get more time to gel, to find out his best 11. Will they give him money to invest in January? Will he be able to sign new players, Laurie?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say about that is obviously the problem with Steve McLaren is they give him too long, because obviously by the time he was out the door, Rafa didn't have, even the magnificent Rafa Benitez didn't have enough time to save us, and because his calculation, and Sunderland somehow beat Man United and we all know what happened. But I just think that it's, if you're going to give him money in January, firstly, how many of the signings did he make in the summer himself anyway? So does it matter whether Steve Bruce is there or not? Potentially no. But also, you know, if he hasn't shown anything up until Christmas and he hasn't been able to get his players to play a certain way, I can't see, like, football's different to how it used to be. I can't see any reason why you would keep someone and then give them loads of money if they have been ineffectual, because Steve Bruce, you know, I guess he could make the argument that, you know, he hasn't had a lot of time and he hasn't had his chance to have a couple of transfer windows to put his mould on the club. But you've got to earn the right to have a transfer window, in my opinion. You've got to show that you're worth putting the trust in to buy the players to play your way. And as we were saying before, how many formations has he tried? And, you know, he didn't seem to know what he was doing against Brighton on Saturday. So why should we assume that he's going to sign players to play his, like, what is Steve Bruce's way? So in my opinion, we left it too late with Steve McLaren. They've just got to take it on the chin if they've made the wrong decision and get him out before. I'm not calling for Bruce out right now, because I know that's a hashtag that's been coming up. I don't want it to, like, be online, I'm calling for Bruce. I'm not. I'm just saying that if it gets to this point and you know, we're in a similar position near to Christmas, why on earth would you give him a transfer window?
I completely agree. If you're not being effective at your job, then bring someone else in. But what were they expecting? And, you know, I'm saying that maybe you should be given time. It's a little bit more catch. You raised your eyebrows when I said that. Should they invest in January? What do you feel about it?
I think they will invest for a couple of reasons. Number one, we'll be in the bottom three in January. Number two, Ashley's a gambler, and he will gamble on spending money and he'll keep us up. And number three, he knows the value of keeping us in the Premier League. He knows that the club makes zero money when we're in the Championship, because he's took us down there twice, so he knows what the balance it'll do to the balance sheet. And he's a stubborn guy, so he kind of sees this as his move, you know, not giving Rafa a contract, getting Bruce in. I think he's almost going to give... and again, it's not giving Bruce money. It's the recruitment team who are recruiting. Bruce is just managing the players that are brought
head
in.
Coach.
There's no way Bruce has signed Saint-Maximin and John Linton. Those players have arrived. Those deals were probably in motion before Bruce was even considered for the job. So I think there'll be investment in January, because the club will need it. And I think there's a stubbornness about Ashley. He'll throw money at Bruce, whereas he didn't throw money at Rafa, because there was a bit of a conflict of power and interest there that annoyed him.
Are you saying that the investment is perhaps solely tied to where Newcastle are in the league? If they're not in that relegation, do you think that maybe they're not as likely to invest in January?
Oh, you wouldn't. If we were mid-table...
15th, yeah, 14th.
They would not spend a penny. They don't like to spend in January, but we've proven this. We signed about five French players 1 year where we nearly went down. And when Rafa had us mid-table in January, they don't like to spend in January because you often don't get very much value for money. Who likes value for money more than Mike Ashley? Not many people. So they rarely spend in January. But if we're in the bottom three, he will panic and he will throw money at the problem.
Yeah, I would catch touching it there, but the club actually do have quite a good record of spending in January when the club are in trouble. You know, McLaren spent quite a lot the summer he came in, but once the club realised in January that, you know, it wasn't enough, I think Shelvey came in and won.
We spent big in January, and it didn't work.
A lot of money. But I also agree with Ketch that if the club are, you know, somehow 14th, 13th, there will not be a penny spent. But I completely agree. Mike Ashley is a gambler, and he knows that to keep that club up, he's got to spend in January. So I think there will be investment.
Well, it has been, like we said, that small sample size. It has only been six games. But is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Or is this now, you've seen six games, you've seen enough, this is pretty much what we're going to expect for the rest of the season, all till May? I can't see not much changing from here on in, Laurie.
Oh, I didn't think you were going to ask me that. I think it's difficult to say, because we obviously haven't seen from Steve Bruce really that much to be encouraged about. Having said that, I think some of the players that we've signed, which were a risk, Joe Linton has looked like, you know, if he gets into a run of form, I'm sure he's someone that could score goals. Saint-Maximin, as much as a terrible game, changed the game when he came on the other day. He was absolutely explosive, and we were saying before, he probably shouldn't have come back as early as he did. But obviously he's come back. You know, he could be really influential. Sean Longstaff, if he gets back to form, and he's not been fully fit at the start of the season, but we have players. Fabian Schär, we've got good players. So on the basis of the players that we have in the squad and what they're potentially able to do, yeah, I think we could end up having a decent season and finish kind of mid-table. And on the face of it, when you look at it, it might not be that different to what it seemed like Rafa had done. However, in my opinion, I think it's unlikely, because Steve Bruce and Rafa Benitez are a calibre apart or more. So I guess by the end of the season, you can see how much of a difference that'll make.
I get worried doing the Newcastle show, I'll be honest, because whenever I feel like I speak, Ketch just frowns, he shakes his head. But then Laurie was speaking and he was doing the same. So maybe it's just everyone. Ketch, what is on your mind? What are you thinking? Are you completely disagreeing, or are you just... Because at the minute, I feel like there's not even a frustration among you, the Newcastle fans, because, you know, when you say, we expect to hear, what I'm actually getting from you is acceptance, not accepting that you're satisfied of where you are, but it's just what we've come to expect, you know, where Newcastle are.
Well, listen, Charlie, you're an Arsenal fan, and Newcastle fans, we do a lot of frowning and we do a lot of head shaking, so you're going to have to get used to that if you want to host this show. So that's the first thing. But Newcastle, at the minute, I think, honestly, we're at the end. We're at the end game. The supporter base, the supporter loyalty reserves are gone. The stadium is, 15% empty. I work for a kids football magazine. What kid wants to support Newcastle right now? What is there to support? In past years, this has been going on really since Keegan left for the second time. People have started to jack in season tickets. I'm not going anymore. And it's just slowly built through John Carver, Pardew, you know, all the bad things that have happened. And now the supporter reserve is there's no one there. The supporters haven't regenerated. Why would you take a kid to watch Newcastle now? Why would you spend 100 quid on a shirt? Why would you spend 500 quid on a pair of season tickets? There's nothing to support there. So we're really in apathy. And I think the atmosphere on Saturday, we weren't at the game, but the lads I've spoken to who were at the game said it was absolutely dead. The biggest cheer was when Andy Carroll got up out of the bench and did a warm-up after about 15 minutes. And this is what we're relying on, impact players like Carroll and St. Maximum to come on and spark something. If those two hadn't come on at the weekend, you know, it would have probably been one of the worst atmospheres imaginable. But they actually, Carroll, you know, well, I'm not expecting him to score double figures, but at least he's going to get the crowd volume up. And St. Maximum, he's an explosive flair player. That's exactly the type of player Newcastle fans like. So those two are the only rays of hope that I see in this club at the minute.
The only rays of hope at the minute. A very true statement. If you was a kid, why would you support Newcastle at the minute? We're going to talk a little bit about Andy Carroll because he did make his first appearance of the Premier League season, even if it was just for 10 minutes, and all about the players that maybe could spark the Newcastle fans into life next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes, Laurie Callis, and BBC's Match of the Day magazine, Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch. And you can tweet us and tweet a question to the guys in the studio at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. We were talking that goalless draw with Brighton. Was it pleasing? Was it frustrating? How annoying overall was it? But it was still a point. We're going to be looking at that game with Leicester next. Let's talk about the attendance, though, because obviously there was a boycott at the start of the season, and obviously it was the Arsenal game. How much of the movement, you know, did that help it? Did it not help it? But obviously, lots of attendance. The attendance is dropping. You're saying about 15% there with the season ticket holders. How big of a problem is this at the minute, Ketch?
Well, it's massive. It's the attendance, inverted commas, on Saturday was our lowest in the Premier League for 8 years at home. We're at 86% capacity, the only Premier League club below 90% capacity. 7,000 empty seats on average in the three home games so far. And the next lowest average of empty seats is Burnley at 1,500. So that's a massive section of empty seats. And I wonder at what stage it becomes an issue for Ashley, because the Premier League don't want to broadcast the game with empty seats. Because how does that look in America, in Asia? They want full stadiums, they want loud stadiums, and Newcastle is neither of those at the minute.
It's a very good point. Obviously, the international global version of the game, we're trying to sell that product, especially when the Premier League wanted to take games abroad. If they're showing games like Newcastle Brighton, which was the main game on Sky, and if there was a big drop off. But obviously, we do talk about every club do it. They say there's X amount in the stadium, and then you look on the cameras or you're at the ground yourself and you're like, that's not the number, but they add on the season tickets. Is there a little bit of that that Newcastle are doing at the minute, Aaron? Are they not really mentioning? They don't want it to go out in the media. How many people are staying away at the minute?
Well, we spoke about this after the Watford game, and we said, oh, there was never 44,000 there. And you know what? There might have been. That was just, we were just sort of guessing, you know, there probably isn't. Mm. But for the club to say there was 43,000 there on Saturday is a lie. You could tell, sat in London watching on Sky Sports, having been a season ticket there for 10 years, a season ticket holder, there was not 43,000 there. There was so many empty seats in the East Stand. There was so many up at the top of the stadium. It was... So the club have definitely fudged it. I mean, Ketch's obviously just been saying in the break that they've got to add someone to save face, and they probably do, because for a club like Newcastle, who, you know, whether you like or you hate Newcastle, you can't say that they don't fill that stadium every week, and we've had some very, very bang average managers over the years, and there's still been over 50,000 there. So it's the first time, you know, probably it's in the Mike Ashley era where it looks like there's going to be a consistent boycott. Now, after Arsenal, I was worried that there wasn't going to be. You know, there was apparently 48,000 there, which probably wasn't correct anyway. But now it's sort, you know, the Watford and the Brighton game, it looks like there is going to be sort of a consensus of people saying we're not going back until someone changes. And based on what we've seen at home so far this season, why on earth would you want to go and spend £40, £50 plus what you're spending before and after in travel? There's just, for me, if I was in Newcastle, I don't think I would have kept my ticket this season. So...
Without asking the obvious, Laurie, because obviously good wins, good football will bring the fans back, but it is more than that. What will bring the fans back now? Will it, is it now just until Ashley's gone, or could the results maybe change and the fans come back, or this is it now, this is serious?
I think it's difficult. The thing that what had gone before the fans physically leaving was the atmosphere, with the exception of bits and bobs under Rafa. Like, there were times when the fans were really behind him. Obviously, we had some great results. I remember when we wanted him to stay, there was great atmosphere. But I've just, from having a season ticket and over the years, it just got worse and worse, the atmosphere. And you'd go in and it was, everyone talks about how good the fans are at Newcastle, and they are really good, but just sometimes you'd go in and you'd sit there and you'd be losing 2-0 and it would be silent, and there's no worse feeling than that in St James's Park. I think something that's really interesting is that we obviously still selling out our away allocations, and there's obviously a reason that people are going to them rather than the home games. That's not just to do with that the team are playing badly, because none of these fans are going to an away game and thinking, oh yeah, we're quite likely to win this week. I'm not thinking that we're going to be winning on Sunday, but I think, you know, actually now giving any type of money to Mike Ashley has become so fundamentally against what fans want to do that they've gone from apathy to actually actively refusing to do that. But, you know, the fans are always still going to go, and I don't think we'll ever stop selling out our away allocation because that's what the fans are like.
Ketch, do you agree with that?
I don't know. I think we might not sell out and do some away allocations this season. Sometimes we've had to send tickets back, or sometimes we've only taken half of the allocated away section in past years because the Newcastle has to foot the bill for anything unsold. But, I mean, it's just crazy that they can report a figure of 43,000 when clearly it was under... It's like someone out of North Korea. Like, it's just a fallacy, isn't it? And I know every club does it. You report sales rather than tickets actually sold in physical bodies in the stadium. But I think it's also going to cause a bit of a wider issue in that we've, for example, got Man United at home coming up. They travel better than any club in the country, probably. There'll be 3,000 in the away section. There'll probably be Man United fans in the home section because Man United's gone on public sale. When has Man United ever gone on public sale in the last 15 years? I can't remember. I might remember that ever happening. There's Man United fans all over the world. There'll be Man United fans in the northeast. They'll probably take tickets in the home end, and then that becomes a safety issue because the stadium's half empty and Newcastle just want to get bums on seats.
It happened with Liverpool last season, just the safety issue. Liverpool, when they thought they could win the league at St James's Park with two games to go, not half the stadium, but when Liverpool scored, so many fans in the home end were celebrating. It was actually causing fights because obviously when the game's like that, 2-2 at 80 minutes, the tension's so high, people scrapping. So yeah, I hadn't even thought of that safety point, but it is, especially for games like Man United.
Well, it's a massive cause for concern because obviously at the time of selling tickets, the club are happy, they're selling tickets, you know, extremely delighted to get the money in, but they can't police it, can they, until there's fans wearing a different shirt in and celebrating in the home end when they shouldn't be. But until then, you don't know if they're Newcastle fans or not, do you?
But it's because it goes on public sale. If it goes on member sale, then you have to be a member, and that's where catching it. I think, if I remember rightly, Liverpool went on member sale and still Liverpool fans got in. So it becomes even more difficult to police when it goes on public sale. And there's the argument, oh, I'm not putting any more money in Ashley's pocket. I think our annual match day turnover is probably around about 25 million quid, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot of money. It's probably what it costs to buy, you know, Muto and pay him for the duration of his contract. It's probably a player at that. So Ashley's, you know, if the stadium was completely empty for a year, which it won't be, then it probably hits him in the pocket for about 25 million. He just doesn't sign an extra player. So it's not going to bother him that. But the interesting thing from my perspective is, when do the Premier League start getting in touch and saying, you know, we can't have empty stadiums for Premier League games? You know, Sky are paying fortunes to broadcast this around the world.
And BT as well. It's a really interesting conversation, but it is Leicester away this weekend. Let's turn our attention to that. Do we know of the away allocation for this one? Is that a full sellout or is it half again, Ketch?
Well, we've won the last two times away at Leicester, so we've took a full allocation and it'll be sold out because everyone will have fond memories of going there.
Well, fond memories, three is the magic number, of course. Newcastle-Leicester. It is a tricky game though because they're in some very good form themselves. Obviously, all respect to Luton, but they did really convincingly beat them last night 4-0 in the Cup, but in the league they're going well as well. They beat Spurs on the weekend. That was at home. We know they're a different opposition altogether at home. Laurie, you're going to the game. Aaron, Ketch, no?
Nope.
No. Right, well, Laurie, you're going to the game. How do you feel that this one will go first?
Do you know what? I haven't got a clue how it'll go. I'm not going with any optimism that we're going to win. But one thing I would say is that when you have a pretty bad manager, you get surprising results. And they're the times when people are saying, oh, maybe Steve Bruce is not that bad. We beat Tottenham. You know, I have a feeling just the fact that we drew with Leicester and they got through in the League Cup, these sort of fixtures tend to turn on their head a little bit. But having said that, how can you say that Leicester last week beat Tottenham? They've got, you know, some of the potentially one of the best midfields in the Premier League. Obviously, they deserve to beat us, don't they? But I'd 100% rather go to that game than I would have been at Brighton.
Aaron, what do you think about the game going on to the weekend?
You know what it is? I know I said during the break that I wanted to be more positive, but I'm just going to come down with more negativity because
I'm really glad you three have come tonight. It's a really positive, upbeat show. You know, there's no politics. You know, this isn't the one show. This is the Newcastle fan show, and the end of time is near. But Aaron, what do you think? Laurie, I can't believe you said they deserve to beat us. I don't think any team deserves to beat anyone before a ball has even been kicked. You can't say they deserve to beat us. Why?
It's
why
a mad
do they deserve?
Thank you.
Someone's agreeing with me. You can't say they deserve to win.
I don't know. Do you know what? Maybe it is what I meant. Look at their ownership their desire to be a proper football club. Mm. I don't mean our fans deserve to get beat.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I know
Mike Ashley deserves
yeah.
to get beat every single week. But you know, I'm still going to go.
Yeah, they've invested in their club. Yeah. We haven't invested as much. They probably do deserve to win. We deserve to lose.
No,
we haven't invested.
Aaron, give me some positive. Any positive on the weekend? Andy Carroll, hat-trick.
Oof, I mean, I had so much to reel off negative. Right, positives.
Positives.
As Laurie's just touched on there, when you have a very bad manager, you can get shock results. Look, we went to Spurs and we were not expecting anything. So you never know if the defence turns up and it's organised as it was that day, then you know what, we probably will stop Leicester. But it's a big if after watching what happened on Saturday. And as the lads have touched on, Leicester are sort of a model club for teams like Newcastle now, because to be in League One, you know, less than a decade ago, to come back up, to win the league, to really invest, to have owners that care, you know, to appoint fantastic managers, you know, Ranieri, Puel, Rodgers. You know, I think out of our next four games, this is the one I was probably most worried about on the face of it, because Leicester are in such good form. Fantastic at the King Power, and yeah, I think I'm trying to be positive, but I can't see anything but a 3-0 Leicester win.
It's 3-0. I didn't even ask for a prediction, you just threw it at this. Brutal. It's a shot, it was fired. Ketch, what are you saying?
I'm saying we've got a good record there. We've won.
This is a good start.
But then we sold in Perez, who got the goals there. So
it's the revenge game. It's massive.
Madison might be injured, ankle knock. He's a brilliant player, isn't he?
Keep it coming.
They're flying, Leicester. Look, what can you do? They rested off the team and beat Luton 4-0 in the League Cup. Would we have even beaten Luton with our strongest team at the minute? Who knows? But it's a really tricky fixture. And it's live on TV. Sky really love to show Newcastle fans looking upset, topless on a Saturday night, Sunday night.
Well, someone who will know a little bit more about the Leicester side, and I'm sure he's going to be full of positivity. He won't be holding back, that's for sure. We'll delight to say we'll be joined by Jake Watson next to give us the Leicester opposition view.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's right. It is time for the opposition view. You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes, Laurie Callis and Matt Ketchell from BBC's Match of the Day magazine. Well, there is not one positive voice in the studio, but I know someone who will be a lot positive about their football team. It is Jake Watson. Jake, we're delighted for you to give us a little bit of your time tonight and chat about your team, because they are absolutely flying. A great cup win last night, beating Luton 4-0. But the fantastic 3 points against Spurs on the weekend. Good vibes around the club at the minute, Jake.
Yeah, good evening, chaps. Yeah, you've caught me at a very good point. Supporting a Leicester City fan. I mean, how nice was it last night to do a Carabao Cup game, make 8 changes and not worry about a disjointed, you know, god-awful performance and kind of scraping through penalties? It was really just a really good sign to show where the club is at the moment, that they can make those changes and that the kind of the squad, the harmony, the options, that they're all there. So yes, a very, very happy Foxes fan at the moment, and looking forward to the weekend.
Jake, it's Ketch here. I wanted to ask you about your new signing, Ayoze Perez. And how's he getting on? And what did you think of the price tag when you first heard that you'd signed him for that much in the summer?
He's actually been kind of a bit of a roller coaster in terms of kind of thoughts and emotions with the Jose. Because initially, when we were linked, I have to say I was fairly underwhelmed, particularly when I saw the price tag of 30 million quid. However, then when we kind of, you know, as anyone, any football fan does, and you come to sign a player, you look a little bit closer into him and his stats and what he's done. And I kind of looked at this thinking, well, this is a player playing in a side in Newcastle, which hadn't been kind of the most attacking and hadn't been the most kind of particularly dominating side. And he kind of scored double figures for the last few seasons. But I thought, well, if he plays on the wing, and if he can play as a second striker to Vardy and get double figures, then that would be kind of a fairly decent return at 25 years old. In the current market, 30 million quid actually isn't the worst in the world. So in that sense, fairly decent, happy with that. But I have to say, he's been the one actually so far. It's been a bit of a disappointment at the start of the season. He's been okay. And that's kind of putting it mildly. He's been in and out of the side. He started the first few games and then he was dropped. Came back in for the game against Spurs. Again, was okay. Then he played last night as a striker. Vardy was rested. And again, he didn't play particularly well. So look, it's still incredibly early days. I'm fairly kind of confident that he will come good, but so far he's been a bit of a slow starter, unfortunately.
Do you think his signing had anything to do with the fact he scored a couple of goals at the King Power over the last couple of
years?
Yeah,
absolutely. So when you came to our place and beat us 1-0, Perez scored a header, didn't he? And I'm fairly certain that is the main reason why Leicester signed him. Brendan Rodgers had just taken over then, and I think that was the only game we lost at home under Rodgers, and it was very much a smash and grab. And Jose was particularly decent on that day. And yeah, when you look at it, he's a young player who can play as a winger and can play as a striker. Leicester need a winger and we need someone as a backup striker. So yeah, I'm fairly certain Perez scoring that goal against Leicester would have convinced Brendan that he was certainly someone worth having around the squad. And I still think he is. So I'm not for a moment writing him off. I'm just saying it's been a little bit surprising because, you know, you often see these slow starters when they come in from another league. Obviously, we know that Perez has played in the Premier League for a number of years. And he's coming into a side that is, you know, significantly better in all due respect to that Newcastle side. And he's playing week in, week out with some better players, with lots of possession. And at the moment, he's just struggling to adapt at the moment to the way that Leicester are playing.
You touched on it there that Perez, you know, isn't getting as much game time as he was at Newcastle. He's in and out of the squad. You know, Leicester obviously have such a fantastic squad at their disposal and obviously Rodgers in charge. What's the sort of aim this season? Can they break into the top four? And obviously, we've seen that they're playing quite strong teams in the Carabao. What's the sort of feeling around the club as to where they can go come May?
Look, there's lots of people getting excited. I'm doing my level best. You can actually hear me smiling through the phone because I'm enjoying it. I don't want to make any predictions whatsoever as regards to how Leicester do. All I'm saying is that no matter what, it's going to be really fun watching us this season. And that's kind of enough for me after the kind of the spell of Claude Puel. It was dire. And even with Shakespeare, it was pretty dull. So under Brendan and his team, it's really young and exciting. With regards to what we can do, look, let's make no bones about it. Right now, Liverpool and Man City are absolutely superb. But when Leicester did win the Premier League in 2015-16, as good as Leicester were, it was the perfect storm in the sense of we also took an opportunity when everyone else was massively below par. And there is, again, let's be completely honest, an opportunity to do the same again. Not for Liverpool and Man City, they're top two. But outside of those two, if you look at Spurs, if you look at Manchester United, if you look at Chelsea and you look at Arsenal, they are nowhere near as strong as they have been under previous years. Now, I'm not for one moment suggesting we'll finish above all of them, but there is actually an opportunity here to break that status quo in that top six. And if one team is going to do it, if you're going to put your kind of a nail to the mast right now, then you have to say that Leicester are in the best position to do that. But it is incredibly early on in the season.
Jake, we've already talked about you taking Perez, our top scorer. I've got another player for you if you want to replace Harry Maguire.
Right,
Fabian
okay.
Cher will probably do a job for you, and I'm sure it'll be a lot cheaper than anyone else. I just want to touch on what you've just talked about in terms of potentially breaking the top four and actually just looking at Brendan Rodgers more specifically. And considering how the likes of Solskjaer's struggling, Pochettino even is not in a particularly good place at the moment. You know, in the top six, there's not that many calibre of managers outside Pep and Klopp that you'd kind of, I think Pochettino's a great manager, but, you know, there's not a lot of managers who you would, you know, back to kind of spearhead their teams to top four. Where do you think Brendan Rodgers himself kind of sits among the calibre of Premier League managers? Like, do you think he's potentially in the top three?
Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, the only reason, remember, that Lampard and Solskjaer have got the jobs that they've got is because of the, kind of their status at the football clubs, not for anything they've ever done as a manager. You know, Brendan's CV is, incredibly kind of significantly stronger than the pair of those. So you have to say right now he is a better manager than what Lampard and Solskjaer is. And if Pochettino was to go, and Daniel Levy decided to go kind of within the Premier League and for someone that's available, you have to say, you know, Brendan probably would be fairly high up on anyone's shortlist. And we also know with Arsenal's situation, you know, Emery's got an option at the end of this current season that they can break that clause in that contract and he can leave. I mean, he has been linked to that job before. I mean, the last thing I want to do is start touting Brendan Rodgers around to kind of the bigger clubs. But I don't think he'll be far from the top of any shortlist if any of those big six were to go, other than Man City and Liverpool. I think we can obviously, the fact he's managed Liverpool before and the fact Man City, you know, Pep's not going anywhere and they're just not going to go for Brendan. But aside from those two, I think Brendan could manage any of them. But let's not be start touting around Brendan anyway. He's very happy where he is at the moment at Leicester.
Well, Jake, we're fairly confident of what you might say, but we have to put you on the spot. What is your score prediction for the weekend?
Well, there's a slight injury problem over James Maddison, so hopefully he's going to be rested and saved for the Liverpool game, which means Ayoze will probably go and play number 10, where Maddison's been playing the last few weeks. But I'm still fairly confident that we should win the game without Maddison, particularly at home. We've been really, really quite good. So I'm going to have to say, lads, I think it'll be fairly comfortable, but, you know, I'm going to go with 2-0.
2-0. We expected nothing less, Jake. Always a pleasure to speak to you. TV presenter and Leicester fan, Jake Watson there, saying 2-0 to Leicester on the weekend. Aaron, you were saying 3-0 Leicester? 3-0 Leicester. Laurie, what is your prediction?
Yeah, well, having said we deserve to lose and trying to sell our best player, I think it'll be more than that, personally. I think it could be 5-0.
5-0 to Leicester. And just because it is a negative show and we say everything, Sunderland have taken the lead in the League Cup. They're beating Sheffield United at Bramall Lane.
Brilliant.
Hey, 1-0.
Pleased for them.
Ketch, what is your score prediction for the weekend?
Oh, look, the Premier League, you just can't predict anything, can you? You know, Newcastle could win. 1-0 Newcastle. Who knows? Who knows?
We've done it. What one to end on? 1-0 to Newcastle. Well, this has been the Newcastle Fan Show. We will be joined by the boys again next week at the same time, 7 to 8, every Wednesday on the Newcastle Fan Show. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.